This week in Retronauts, Sonic CD, more like Sonic C, Dr. Ovi Kinterbor D, Ovi D, because I've got COVID. Hello, welcome to Retronauts. Thank you. You're not getting a good joke because, as previously mentioned, at the time of this recording, I've got COVID.
Okay, COVID. Okay. Can I step in here?
Yeah.
Just thought about this. Mm-hmm. Sonic CD's nuts.
That's good. That's pretty better. Should we do over? This week in Retronauts, Sonic CD's nuts. There we go. I'm not doing the whole thing. We have like an amazing theme song though. If you haven't heard it,
rules. It's quality.
I think it's
Anna Managuchi who did that. You know, Anna Managuchi.
It's probably one of the two or the top five podcast theme tunes I've ever heard.
What other ones are good? Do you think?
One More Go. I don't know if you've ever listened to that Scottish gaming podcast done by Barry, who does all the cool stuff. It's really good. You'd love it. It sounds like Dizzy, but exploding out of your screen.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Dill Dorks, that's just a good song called I Want You in My Bedroom. It's very good.
Dill Dorks?
Yeah.
What is that about? Is that like
it's
the Dillcast?
Friend of a Friend's podcast about all doing sexo.
Oh, like dildos. Is that what you do? Dill Dorks. I quite like that. Because a dork is also a penis, isn't it? So it works in both ways.
Am I right about that being the name, or is that a different podcast about that?
Well, how many dildo podcasts do you listen to?
Well, this is the thing. I've only heard one once, but I might have heard people refer to another one.
You have to get a broad base. You know, you need to get a lot of perspectives before you make any decisions.
You know what you really need a broad base on is a dildo.
That's what they say on the podcast. Yeah, the first advice they get. Yes, it is the Dildox. Thank goodness.
Hello, welcome to Retronauts. Hello. Who's with me today? Dave, you're here, aren't you?
Yep. Hello, I'm Dave. And I was thinking that for this, I'm Dave Bulmer from Sonic the Comic the Podcast, and I was thinking that for this episode of Sonic Retrospective Retronauts, I would go to another country and make my own one, and then you and Shay can make one. And oh no, that analogy doesn't work. You and Shay should go to another country and make this episode, and I should make my own this episode, and yours will definitely be better than mine because I'm not.
Is this a reference to the multiple soundtracks? And
that's a reference to how like some of the team went away to America and made a better game than this, and then some people stayed behind and made this.
Oh yeah, but what was the better game they made? Because I can only think of Sonic 2, which is less markedly worse.
Oh yeah, I forgot you hate Sonic 2, don't you?
No, I don't hate it. It's just not as good as Sonic CD.
Well, what they made was Sonic 3.
Yes, they made Sonic 2.
Yes, they made Sonic 2 while they were there, but it was to prepare for making Sonic 3.
Mm. Well, how do we feel about Sonic 3 collectively?
I don't really care for Sonic 3 in the
rubbish.
I can't think of much to say about it.
Two answers with
God.
Me too.
Shall we start again?
Shame, you're here, aren't you?
Hello, yes, I'm Shemi, I'm here, I've had 5 hours sleep, I'm tanked up on coffee and like a 2-liter bottle of Iron Brew, I've had a massive Haggis Mackay supper, and I'm going to bring a weird energy to this podcast.
Yes! I think we're already bringing a weird energy. I've got COVID, you've got no sleep, and Dave's just Dave Bulmer.
I've got this recording here of Shemi earlier today, I'm just going to put it on. Hello, I'm Shame, and I'm about to have some Iron Brew and some haggis.
Oh my god, I can't believe you said that. What?
The two things that get me about that is number one is that there wasn't a single letter R in there. It's like the one defining thing about my speech impediment. Mm. Number two. I literally just admitted to having haggis and Iron Brew. That's literally what I have done today.
No, you're right. No, but what I was going for there. No, what I was going for there is that before you had the haggis and the Iron Brew, you were like English. That was what I was going for there.
Oh, I see.
And now we can hear the effect. Shall we start this episode again?
God, yes. This week in Retronauts, Sonic CD, more like Sonic cock dick penis. Christ in heaven. Okay.
So am I English now?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Oh, okay.
And I'm Scottish now. That's not broad at all. Anyway, what we're talking about is Sonic CD, and this is a shambolic chaos episode because it's going to be that way.
For different reasons, impaired in the brain today.
Yeah, I don't know
what mine is. It is probably just who I am. But I've had a... No, there's been a man in my flat all day painting the ceiling.
Yeah, I'm sorry
How am I supposed to be a normal person under those conditions?
The paint fumes as well.
Plus, we're all Sonic fans.
Yeah.
You shouldn't listen to them under any circumstances.
But what we're talking about today is, because this is a very unusual podcast, we're talking about a very unusual Sonic game. CD, a game that still stands apart from pretty much every other game in the series, I would say, no matter how much they have decided to sort of call back to it. They've never really managed to recapture it, nor have they particularly tried to, because, I mean, let's face it, this is a very divisive Sonic game. Even I used to dislike this game before I understood it. That's not to say once you understand it, you will love it. It's just to say that if you don't understand it and love it, and no offense, you're an idiot and I hate you.
Well, it's rather timely, isn't it? Because this...
timely?
We are coming up now on director Naoto Oshima's triumphant return to Sonic the Hedgehog with Sonic Superstars, which will probably be out by the time this episode's out.
Bloody hell, you're right, it will. Yeah, that's weird. Wow. We'll all be disappointed by it by then. My word. So I think the best place to start would be, I want to directly ask you, I'll start with you again, Dave Bulmer. What's your history with Sonic CD? Like, when did you first encounter this game? What did you make of it? That's what I'd like to know.
I can very clearly tell you this. This is something I remember very, very well. Because, Sonic CD at first was just a myth and a legend to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, nobody had it.
No, God, nobody.
Not in real life did you ever see a Mega CD in your real life.
I've still never seen one. I'm still not 100% convinced they existed.
But I became really intrigued and started thinking of this as a, because I'm from the before times, right? We're talking, we're going back to before there was internet to hear about it on. So I heard about it in the, what was it called? The Sonic 2 Gold Player's Guide or something?
It
was just a paperback book that you get from the school book fair, which I bought because I didn't have a Mega Drive and I wanted to essentially like, read Sonic 2.
You want to vicariously play it through words.
Yeah. Mm. And I expected this full-color, you know, screenshots of the entire game making up maps. But no, it was just diagrams. It was just like just lines and dots representing rings. So I still... In fact, were the rings little X's, maybe? Anyway, I still sat in bed reading this book like I'm reading Sonic 2. No backgrounds, nothing, just diagrams of the layout. But in the middle... to show you how to do the bosses, they had a few color pages like you would have in a paperback book.
Can I interject with something real quick?
Yeah.
I think that in having read Sonic 2, you've sort of got the intellectual edge over the people who played it.
It's just inherently a higher art form.
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, did you play Sonic 2 on the telly? Yeah. No, I read the book.
No, I read the book.
I thought the book was better.
Well, most of these screenshots were of bosses. Unless I'm thinking of Stay Sonic there. It could just be this.
No, that was the golden guide. I remember this too. Yeah.
And then it went, and check this out, that's coming soon. And it was a couple of screenshots from Sonic CD, mostly, I think, from the intro. And they were weird screenshots, like one from that bit where the camera kind of goes under his face. And it was just
choices.
Like, what's this? And then one of him zipping down the big tall rock with the sort of star of speed shine behind him. And it was just like, what am I... There was just no way of telling what you're looking at, but you knew something special was happening. And then... This is my real... This is what I'm about to tell you is what Sonic CD really, truly means to me.
Well, I'm excited to hear it.
When I was a bit old... When I was old enough that people around me were starting to grow out of Sonic, so like 14, I was in an optional class. On Wednesday afternoons at my school, you had a sort of a list of things that you chose at the start of the year and you cycled through them. Modular studies afternoon. And I was just in this one kind of computers class where you were just playing that game where you were a boat discovering America or whatever it was. On the BBC Micro, which was what we had in our school. That's how old I am.
Mm.
And there were these two kids there who were a year younger than me. I thought of them as kids because, like, when you're 14, that seems so small, the year younger than you. Maybe they were 2 years. But anyway, they were into Sonic and they knew who Richard Elson was. That's Sonic the comic artist. And they, do you know what I mean? We were on the same wavelength about Sonic. And they had Sonic CD and a Mega CD. And I say they were so close as friends, these two. Like, if you met anyone with this friendship, you'd just assume they were a couple now.
Like Sonic and Tails.
And there kind of was a cool, quieter one and a chirpier, bouncier one. That was the thing. So, yeah, actually, I never thought of it before. But anyway, we became Sonic friends, almost secret Sonic friends. Like, you know, I wouldn't hang out with them and my other friends at the same time.
Yeah, you'd have been shunned.
Well, maybe. And the thing is, yeah, probably, because my friends probably starting playing football and stuff. And I don't know that.
I think age gap Twitter would have been up your ass these days.
They would. No, they would. Yeah. And anyway, so they lent me the CD just to copy onto a tape, the music. So to me, it's an album. Sonic CD is an album that has an interesting visual element to it that is optional. If you fancy sitting down and playing the interactive visuals to Sonic CD, the album, then you can. And it wasn't until the PC release in 96, well, I got it in 97, that I ever really played it.
And this was the EU version had the Japanese soundtrack,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yeah. the correct
superior soundtrack. EU version. Yeah.
Yes, but I do. But don't worry, Americans. I also like the American soundtrack almost as much. Not as much, obviously. It's not as good, but almost as much.
What about you? Because you must have had a very different experience coming to this game, considering that when it came out, you were a sperm.
I just want to. No, I literally was. I think
you were some cum.
I was. Let me tell you, I excelled at being cum.
Would you say that was the highest point of your life to date?
He peaked early.
He peaked in the balls. I'm getting fired from Retronauts.
I don't know that that's going in, but it was very
it's
funny.
It's going in, Dave. It's going in. Oh, wait, say that
that's
again.
That's what Shay's dad said.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do. Damn it. Damn you, COVID.
No, sorry, actually, I was 6. I was 6 months old when this came out.
Damn, that's disappointing.
I'm glad you qualified that, because 6 and 6 months are very different things.
My first exposure to Sonic CD was I bought the Sonic Mega Collection GameCube.
Nintendo GameCube.
And this was Forbidden Fruit. You know,
Was this based on like an existing love of Sonic, like enjoyment of Sonic?
Oh yes, well, because I'd read the comics and had bought the three. You know, I saw Sonic Adventure and I bought the comics, and then I only had a PC for most of my childhood. So like I was getting like the scraps of like the explosive release of like it was literally explosive release of Sonic R and.
Oh,
Sonic
did you get the one that didn't have the background music?
What?
No, I didn't. No,
there was like a whole batch of that didn't have the music.
Oh my god,
Stu!
Stuart. What?
That's what Abby had. She's always claimed that her copy didn't have the music.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I've got it. One of. Okay, listen. There are two explosive releases of Sonic R. This is an exclusive to Retronauts factoid. If it's got white spine, I think it means no music. If it's got orange text on the spine, it means music. Because I've got both. And it was an error. It was a mistake.
Of course it was.
Yeah. So now the mystery has been solved. Yeah, no. And let me tell you, that game without the music is not as fun.
No. Well, yeah, the music makes that game. Also, can I just say factoid is actually like an incorrect fact?
Yeah, I know, but it means both things now because the world's a horrible place.
I hate that. Anyway,
I know, it's awful, isn't it? The factoid means two things that are completely opposite, but both are in the dictionary as valid.
Yeah.
Isn't that typical of a world that allows Sonic the Hedgehog to exist?
Like, when did knowledge become a burden?
as we started recording these, mate.
As nerds were allowed to keep existing.
So I got Sonic Mega Collection, so I had like a bunch of classic Sonic games. What I didn't have on there was Sonic CD. And all we had was we had that obviously spectacular intro.
Yeah.
And I was enchanted. I was mesmerized. This game became Forbidden Fruit. Mm. Sonic CD, what's that for? The Mega CD, what the hell's that? You know, like, yeah. This was like an obscure add-on to a console that I didn't own, and, you know, like, that had flopped, and so it was all ludicrously expensive.
Yeah.
And it became something that I thought, I'm never going to get my hands on this.
Yeah.
And then, of course, a couple of years later, Sonic Gems Collection comes in. I'm like, oh my God, Sonic CD. And I sat down and I played, it had the American soundtrack on it, no matter where you were, unfortunately, because I do prefer the Japanese soundtrack. But I sat down and I played it and I was like, oh my God, this might be the best Sonic game ever made just because of the fact you could do the peel out. That was literally it. But
the peel out, incidentally, in case anyone doesn't know, you know the spin dash when you press down and you charge up a dash and then release it? That was also in this game in a really weird nerf form. But the peel out is if you hold up and hold the jump button, Sonic does the figure eight legs run on the spot. And then when you release it, he'll go zipping off, but he'll be standing up instead of rolling. That's what the peel out is, just in case.
And it's really cool. Like, it's a really cool artistic flourish because, like, his ribbon red legs turn into a figure eight, like an infinity loop.
Like a sort of Mobius strip.
A Mobius strip, yeah. It's really cool. It looks great.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
But so that came and went, and I was still like, oh man, but the Japanese soundtrack's so much better, and blah blah blah. So like in about
so you'd experienced the Japanese soundtrack through like what, like
he was getting them on Galbadia Hotel,
just online, really? just hearing it online, and also hearing like Sonic fans talk about it.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, this would have been like after YouTube was a thing.
Right. I didn't know that. Okay, yeah.
But basically, then I got older, then I joined the 88 Sonic Forum in like 2010, which was a bad plan.
Yeah, sounds shit.
Yeah, and...
I bet you met some real twats on that.
this is how I met Stu. And this was... So that's also where I kind of got into emulation. Slight problem. I had a Mac. I wasn't...
An open emu wasn't a thing yet, presumably.
Well, no, it wasn't. And... like, so of course Mac emulation is quite substantially further behind.
Yeah, that's regular. What they call emulation in Scotland.
Yes, mate.
Listen, I'll tolerate nay Scottish stereotype and jokes on this podcast. Let me take a swig of my drink here.
You have to admit that was a pretty good one though.
No, that was great. That was fantastic. But so I had to wait. It was a glorious day. It was a bra day to be shamey when finally Kega Fusion updated and you could emulate Sega CD games on a Mac.
Nice.
So I finally got to experience this alongside Sonic Mega Mix.
Yeah. Fan hack, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and just like a bunch of other cool games. It's kind of been this weird forbidden fruit for quite a while, and then I finally got to play it, and thankfully I found it kind of lives up to the hype. It's probably my second favourite Sonic game after Sonic 3.
I think we have an agreement on that, me and you, because, except for me, it depends what day it is. It's that kind of thing with me, because I really love this game so much that it really does kind of sometimes veer into, like, 3 and Knuckles territory. Now, the thing is, I think that 3 and Knuckles is by some distance the more spectacular, like, achievement.
Mm-hmm.
Because of it, the fact that it is a third and fourth sequel, you know, that they could still pull out something like that. But Sonic CD is just so unique, and it doesn't feel like any other platform game, or any other Sonic game for that matter. I mean, I'm not going to go into massive detail on how I first encountered it, but it's not dissimilar, except to Dave, except for me, I think I saw it in the Sonic Yearbook, the 2002 one, the one with the Elson cover. I'm reasonably certain there's a couple, there's a page about Sonic CD in there, like a review of it or something. And the thing about Sonic
2?
No, 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 1992. Sorry, I don't know why I said 2002. I got COVID.
Probably why, yeah.
That's probably why. But yeah, it was either the 92 or the 93 yearbook, you know, with the green spines, those ones. Yeah. You're not talking about those pieces of shit. And
I do now that we're not saying 2002. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And there's a page of Sonic CD in there. And like, the thing about Sonic CD that we haven't mentioned is this game graphically is like the shit. Like, yeah. we are talking the most ridiculous, like, color depth and neon looking, like, crazy aesthetic. Like, it's super
screenshots
good looking.
Well, and even if I would say, especially if you're looking at screenshots, like, you know, especially if you've not actually played it, you look at these pictures and be like, what?
Yeah,
I've got to get a Sonic Omega CD then.
If you haven't played it, it's even more impressive looking because for that reason, it's because it looks like no other Sonic game. Like nothing else has that depth of like number of colors on the screen. You know, it's like wild stuff, totally unusual, alien looking thing. It sort of reminds me a bit of the movie Speed Racer because it's just so determined to be otherworldly. It's,
yeah,
and you know, and the detail of it's just incredible. Like there's always something going on spectacularly to see. But I didn't get to play it until. An ex-girlfriend of mine lent me these PC version that came out in the mid to late 90s, which I think also had the US soundtrack.
It did, yeah. That was the version I had. And when I, not knowing about this, because, you know, early days of being on the internet, everything, I just thought the PC version had a different soundtrack. I didn't know it was an American one.
I mean, that was sort of would make sense, given that the Sonic and Knuckles collection had different
music. That was the sort of thinking, yeah.
Yeah, but I did eventually play it on, again, Sonic Gems Collection, which was a port of the PC version with all of the sort of weird menu nonsense that comes with that. But that was when I first learned to appreciate the game, I think. Well, that, because I remember talking about it in the way that... Okay, and I'm going to get on my hobby horse now. The way people talk about this game online drives me crazy because what they say is just drivel. And what they say, and you hear this a lot, is they say it's ROM hacky bullshit.
What?
That exact phrase. Because they don't understand the reason why the levels have been designed the way they are is so that they can be explored. In fact, you know what? We should talk about what you do in this game.
Yes.
Because that's crucial.
Before we talk about that, do we want to talk about that introduction? Because I feel like that is...
We should talk about the introduction.
A huge part of, like... Yeah. Sonic CD's makeup, that first impression that it makes.
Yeah, what it is you got the Sega logo and Sonic standing next to it doing his finger wiggle, and then like a jizz of stars comes out of his finger, and he goes, doo-doo. It's amazing. I'm just doing a bit. Go on, Shay, what were you saying?
I was happy for you to take the reins there. Okay.
Oh, okay. No. I mean, I'm happy. I'll take the reins. I've got them with both hands, mate. The Sonic CD intro is a... I want to say Toei Animation did this.
Well, it's not. Didn't we find out it's not?
It's not, but it's sort of in their style, right? It's in their vein of their stuff, isn't it? Why do I think they did it?
Because everyone calls it Toei Sonic. Everyone, for years and years and years, everyone has said Toei did it. But I feel like a year or two ago, they found out, oh, actually, it was this other company or something.
Jesus, someone really stepped on their toys.
Yay!
Yeah.
Shay, are the little splutterings you're doing under these loud voices you saying the real answer?
I'm trying. I literally had something up that
hello,
telling who did
Junio,
the introduction
Junio.
Animation, and it's gone. It's not there.
Junio.
That was it. It was Junio. Yes.
And this is because there was a tweet by a man called Iguchi, who presumably people know who is and has to do with Sonic. And he said, naming is actually a good thing for me, but when I was told Toei Sonic, the people of Studio Junio who worked hard on low wages for 4 months felt sorry for me. So, quote, I'm not drawing Toei, it's Junio. Sorry for the poor explanation. Okay, so it's not someone from Sonic, that's someone who drew a Sonic.
Oh.
Called it a Toei Sonic and was corrected.
Well, it's Junio then. It's Junio. And,
Studio Junio, yeah.
Yeah. Now, what this depicts, and let's go with the Japanese version, just because that's what I'm going to consider to be the canon version. Not that I dislike Sonic Boom, it's a fine song.
Sonic Boom's okay. A cracking song.
Yeah, yeah, it's very good. But it's not exactly Toot Toot Sonic Warrior now, is it?
No.
Because what you got here is still probably peak anime Sonic. Like, it's just... I don't even know how to begin describing this. Can someone else please do it?
Okay, right. So what you have is
Let's take it in turns. Let's all have a go.
This
you
brilliant... Sonic the Hedgehog has always worked better in 2D. Like, sorry. That sound... That, what I mean is, as a character design...
No, Shay. It's true in all respects.
Okay. Well, as
stand by it.
I feel more complicated about it than that mechanically. But as a character design, he was designed to be very cartoony, very 2D. And yep. This is one of those showcase moments that show exactly why he works so well. It's so expressive and it's so fluid and it's so enchanting to look at. It is literally just a minute and a half of Sonic running through a field. And that sounds rubbish. That sounds so bloody boring. But he's running along and there's this, I believe it's New Jack Swing is the genre. This incredibly upbeat, energetic...
I would not call this New Jack Swing personally. Not me.
Everybody says New Jack Swing. Whenever I've gone to look at...
Well, it's closer to Eurodance, I would...
Well, this is the thing. Whenever I've gone to... famously... The Sonic CD Japanese soundtrack is described as New Jack Swing. When I've gone to listen to actual examples of New Jack Swing, which I'm not nearly as familiar with, they don't really resemble it to my ears, except maybe a couple of tracks on there, and I think that's what's happened. I think there is New Jack Swing on it.
I would say some of it is on the sound. Some of the soundtrack is New Jack Swing, but this song in particular, I don't think it is. I don't know what I would call it, but it doesn't have
the
vibe for it. It's too fast-paced.
I'm absolutely happy to defer to others' expertise on that. Like,
this is not expertise.
If I'm wrong, please comment and call me a fat
These
idiot.
Are all just pub reckons.
Well, no, absolutely. If somebody does know, please let us know. I would love to know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's this app, like really, like kind of like I do not know how to describe it. You just have to listen to it. Type in "You can do anything, Sonic CD."
Well, hang on, it's probably going to be played on this episode, so just listen to that.
Okay, like, just listen to that.
Yeah. Or just listen to this. Toot toot Sonic Warrior, something in Japanese. Toot toot Sonic Warrior, I don't know the words. I'm gonna stop.
It's Toot Toot Sonic Warrior always takes a chance. Toot Toot Sonic Warrior wears no underpants.
That's the playground version.
We were all formulating the line that ends with pants. That's exactly it. That was it. Perfect.
May I say, well, I may volunteer. You can poo anything to make it even more childish.
Yeah, I was gonna. I was nearly there. I was gonna go with wears too many pants. Not as good.
So it's Sonic running through the field and he's like doing like loop the loops on these really organic tree, like these tree branches have formed a really organic loop and he zooms around it and the camera angles are super ambitious and these animators know exactly how to squash and stretch and break Sonic's character. There's a bit like in the ending cutscene where his arms are coming out of the back of his head and it is like one of the most iconic poses that Sonic has ever struck. These guys are experts. They know exactly what they are doing.
It might be worth noting, as good as this is, you are still watching it in Sega CD Vision.
Yes, if you're on the actual Mega CD version, then this is very nasty to look at. I remember being amazed by it.
It's awesome. Yes, it's
compressed to hell.
Yeah, it's compressed to hell. It's still awesome, but...
Well, it's not just that it's compressed. It's something else. It's that, like... So what it is, this, for some reason... I'm going to step in and do my little version of the intro now. Intro animes were a thing I was into. That's what we called them on the Amiga. Intro animes.
On the Amiga.
And the best games... That's not true, but the games that excited you the most, because they had them, and you would, this whole disc is just the anime? Yeah, let's watch it. Well, Sonic CD, though, I still don't think I've heard of another game of that era that did this. Commissioned a proper actual animation. Like, now, what we have now is the Source animation with painted backgrounds, full frame rate, this amazing animation. That is not what played on the Mega CD. What played on the Mega CD wasn't even what you would think of a compressed version of that. It wasn't that it was blocky or that, you know, flat colors were made out of jumbly messes. No, it was like, and it might be what it is, someone had drawn over each frame and you only got to see, say, four of them a second, something like that.
It does look like that, doesn't it? I don't know the actual tech behind it, but it really does look like someone's drawn over it with pixels.
With
like,
pixels. And, and perfectly flat colours, where in the original they're painted and it's quite subtle. But what? But this animation of this little character just running along took what was a good design already, but up till now we'd seen it in two forms, basically. The sprites in the actual games themselves, which, particularly in Sonic 1, were quite quite sort of geometric, you know, more than expressive. And the cover art by Greg Martin, which is just something else. Again, it was a different interpretation. And they turned him into this whirling little guy. And I think the really clever thing that they did was that they took the impossible shape that was Sonic, which up till now had been, there'd been a lot of contention about, what is this? Is this a mohawk of spines down the middle of his back? Is this, you know, if you look at the sprite in Sonic 2 when he turns over, it's like three rows, but of razor-thin mohawk-style spines.
Yeah.
And they turned it into young Goku's hair. That thing where, no, it's about, it doesn't matter how many spikes there are going off in what direction. It's about what would be the best drawing from this angle to imply the idea of this spiky mass of the back of his body. And in doing that, every frame of this animation is the best drawing anyone had ever done of Sonic the Hedgehog. And for some reason, no one did it this well again until Sonic Mania.
Well, Can I just interject with a slightly, probably slightly too broad comment here?
Yeah.
I mean, this would have been the first time we'd seen, and I'm going to say it, proper Japanese-looking Sonic, not American redrawn Sonic, right?
Yes.
Apart from in the sprites and the games, obviously.
Yep.
So what you're seeing is, and I'm sorry, because I like American Sonic, I do, but I'm just saying that what we've got here is a cuter, more appealing character.
Yes,
you know,
he is.
But still cool, because for me, watching this intro, and I still get it now, and I'm not even slightly ashamed of this, I get slightly emotional at the bit where he runs up this mesa,
like a spinny roundy bit,
lands on the top of it, and then he looks out at the Miracle Planet, and then just starts running up the thing, because of course he does, that's what he's for, you know.
Do you know the bit that gets
me? It's the most perfectly, like, Sonic thing.
The bit that gets me is in that, and I remember having this reaction to it when I saw it on, maybe not on the Mega CD, but certainly on the PC version, where it's a bit better quality, but also incredibly compressed.
Yeah.
Is the same bit. He runs up the twisty, pointy mesa thing, stands on the top of it, and having stood on the top of it, the animators just decided to have him, like, rebalance his weight slightly. He's been there for a few frames, and then he just changes his pose subtly, and it is one of the best pieces of animation I had seen to that date. Like, the fact of making the choice to do it when there is no need to was like, oh my god, it was seismic. Well, seeing that,
it was like, what gets me about this animation, like, I kind of buried the lead, but what gets me about the animation is the imagery as well. There are some absolutely spectacular shots that are going to stay with me for the rest of my life. Like the bit where there is like the U-bend in a river and he runs across it, and as he hydroplanes, the water scooshes up and creates rainbows.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely stunning. Yeah. Just an absolutely gorgeous, imaginative little set piece.
Yeah.
And then he goes up a mountain and you see what he's running towards, and the camera pans back and it is Dr. Robotnik has chained a planet to a mountain that he has also carved his face on because he's Dr. Robotnik.
Yeah.
And then there's that, and then Sonic just using an entire mountain as a ramp to get up there, which is like perfectly encapsulating the game's mechanics. You do that in the game.
Yeah.
But If you want to know why we are all so bloody weird about Sonic,
yeah,
if you like see these dinky little Mega Drive games and go, well, what's the big deal? What, like, you know, this shouldn't inspire the psychosis it has.
It's because we're maladjusted.
It's because we're imagining that.
Yeah.
It's true.
And, oh wait, and there was a song! Whichever version you were playing, there was a song. Imagine this. Imagine this. It's the hall of my primary school, right? Just picture the hall of your primary school, yeah? And along comes little Dave. He's got his great big glasses. He's got his two big front teeth. He's a sweet little lad.
I'm standing there pounding my palm with my fist like, yes, mate. Yeah. Here we go.
He is carrying with him his tape recorder. Now, he's not at this school. This is a thing. We've gone back for... I don't know why we were at the primary school. There was some kind of barbecue on.
It was
a
local event.
They were just used it as a venue for something. But my friend, who was like one of my first Sonic owning, you know, the game friends, his mum was there. And I was like, she'll get this. So I went up to her and I was like, listen to this. And I played her this song. And
which
she was
song?
Like... The song. The
Sonic Boom?
You can do anything.
Oh, you can do anything. Okay.
There was no Sonic Boom in those days. This is when I just had our Euphoria version.
Okay.
And Japanese version. And she was like, okay. And she didn't know why I was playing her this song, this random song. And I was like, it's pretty good for a Sonic game, isn't it? And she was like, okay, yeah. It meant nothing to her. But to me, it was clear as day what I was trying to communicate. Like, no, it's a song!
Would you like voices! Would you like to hear about my messed up exposure to this song?
Okay.
Would you like to get your mind blown right now?
Okay.
First time I heard You Can Do Anything, would you like to know what I thought about it? Would you like to know, Shay? Would you like to know, Dave?
I would, yeah.
Yes,
okay,
please.
Well, I'm going to tell you what it was.
Less and less time goes on, but yes.
Oh, it's the music from Sonic the Hedgehog 2 on the Master System Green Hills Zone.
Oh, you hipster!
Oh, you of course big, you would think, yeah.
Excuse me. I had a Master System. I was the opposite of a hipster. I had a Master System, okay?
Yeah, worth mentioning. Yeah. It is, for some reason, a cover of a random zone tune from the
Master System. Now, having a Master System now, that's quite hipster.
I genuinely thought you were building towards that being the song you lost your virginity to or something.
No. That was what I'm made of. That's not true. I don't know. That'd be a good one though to lose your virginity to, wouldn't it? Let me show you just what I'm made of. 2 seconds later, I wasn't made of much. I'm sorry.
What goes up must come down.
Perfect. Live and learn, etc., etc. Forever until the heat death of the universe. So that's enough about the intro, I think.
Next week on Retronauts.
Oh, God. We haven't talked about the game at all, hardly. But no, what I wanted to talk about, because we're not going to go through this forensically. There's no point.
No.
There's no need to do that. It doesn't matter. This game is not about that. What this game is about is I want to talk about how it's different from other Sonic games in its gameplay, essentially. Now, taking aside the control changes we've already mentioned, like the addition of the Super Pilau, let's make this clear. What's the story with this being the next game after Sonic the Hedgehog or after Sonic 2? Because I think it was made after Sonic, but came out after Sonic 2. Is that fair? Is that right?
Yeah. I'll field this one.
Please field this one.
Go on, Shay.
Okay, so this game came out.
Are you fielding it now? Okay,
this game came out after Sonic the Hedgehog 1.
Yeah,
that's it.
Okay.
No, what happened was that there was like a bit of a schism in Sonic Team. After Sonic 1, I believe Yuji Naka actually went to Nintendo. He was like, he sat in a car outside a Nintendo because he was thinking, I should apply for a job here.
And embezzled the shit out of him.
And he didn't end up doing that. What he ended up doing is he ended up...
He just sat in the car park and didn't go through with it?
Yeah. So far as I know, yes. I hope I'm not misremembering. But and what he did was, for one reason or another, he went across to America, where he was part of the STI, which was a sexually transmitted infection, the Sega Technical Institute. And that's where, like, Sonic Team moved to, and that's kind of like where they made like Sonic 2 and then Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Japan, Naoto Oshima, who was the artist who had designed Sonic, who had created the character himself, was kind of in the director's chair of his own sequel to Sonic 1. So it's kind of like a split thing, and...
God, they just immediately out of the gate just beefed it, didn't they? Like, I mean, yes, we got two good games out of it, but, like...
Accidentally.
How could they possibly... Like, straight out of the gate, they Sega'd it up. Like, Insta-Sega. Craziness.
And, yeah, like, so... It was originally supposed to be a port of Sonic 1. It was supposed to be, like, a director's cut of Sonic 1, Sega CD, but then it became its own thing, and it's kind of like, so they were developed concurrently. I believe Sonic 2 released first.
Yes, that's my understanding.
And then Sonic CD, yeah.
It definitely did.
What Sonic CD does, Sonic 1 and 2 and 3, you are about making your way through these stages. Now, you collect... there is an exploration factor in the fact that you collect rings, collect 50 rings, get into a star post or whatever, or the end of the stage, a special stage, get an emerald, move on. You know? And, you know, if you explore, there is stuff to find, like, you know, one-ups and extra tellies and all that sort of thing. And part of it is, and the beauty of it to some extent, is that none of it's actually really necessary. You can finish the game without doing that. You can just beeline to the end if you want to, but if you want to take a different route, you might find something new. It's part of the beauty of what makes these games so popular for so many years. Sonic CD, not too dissimilar, but there's a lot more emphasis placed on the exploration if you want to get a good ending, which in this game is substantially more complex than getting 7 or 6 Chaos Emeralds. That's not necessarily the case, because there is an option to get Time Stones, which are this game's version of the Emeralds. Now, to get those, I believe it's the same method as Sonic 1, which is to get 50 rings and then jump through a giant ring at the end of the act, as they're called in this game. Then you will play a special stage, which is a sort of Mode 7 3D-ish thing where you bop UFOs. Maybe we'll talk about it later. It's not that big of a deal. However, if you're cool like me, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to get a good future in each zone. Now, what is that? What that means is when you start a zone, you're going to be in the present of said zone, where Robotnik's already been there, and let's face it, he's been messing about. Because he's been travelling through time, and he's gone into the past, and he's created what I'm thinking is a Badnik generator. Is that fair to say?
Yes. It's the medical planet, apparently, like, which is this little planet that hangs in the sky that Robotnik has chained. Apparently, time works differently there, or the flow of time is very...
malleable, I suppose.
Mercurial. Yeah. And so what you do is you can grab these posts, you can run past these posts, and they spin around, and then they go, past, and then, or, yonchon, and, you know, and then you go to the... And what you do is you do Back to the Future rules. I think this is so cool. You run at top speed for a sufficient amount of time, and you get a time warp. You either go back or forward in time.
Yeah.
And so, like, your goal is to go back to the past.
To play the shitty game of Suckers. Yeah.
Your goal is to go back to the past and destroy this Badnik generator, thus undoing all of Dr. Robotnik's hard work.
Yeah. Now, quick pressing again, even though you've just said it, I'm going to give it just a real quick. Basically, say you're in Palm Tree Panic Act 1, the first level of the game. Find a past signpost, go fast enough to go into the past, find the Badnik generator, you're done. You can leave that level, right? But you don't have to. You don't have to leave that level. Because if you want to, you can then find a future signpost, go into the future, get back to the present again, find another future signpost, go into the future, and then you're in the good future, which you made. You made that happen. If you want to, you can go into the future before that and look at the bad future, and these are all different.
They're all completely different. The music's different, the graphics are different.
Aesthetically different, and the level layouts are a little bit different as well.
This winds me up so much talking about this game, right? Because the thing is that you're smart cookies, Retronauts listeners. You're sitting there like, hang on a minute. If all you need to do is go back into the past and destroy the Badnik generator, then you don't need to go to the future, do you? You don't need to go to the future at all. So that... Mm. Wow, like, and I've heard this a lot. The bad future and the good future, completely superfluous. They don't matter. And this, to me, is the difference between playing a game for the joy of playing a game and playing a game so you can check it off of a checklist.
All right.
It's also the difference between, like, being a cool guy and being a knob.
Because, this is it. And don't get me wrong, I've done it. I've done that from the other perspective. Like, I've been on the other side of that paradigm. There's been loads of games that it's like, okay, I don't have a particular interest in playing this, but I feel that I ought to because it's so popular or because it's so big or important or whatever. I get it. But at the same time, you absolutely have to have the ability to go into the future because otherwise... What the hell are you doing it for? You have to be, like, because you go into a level, if you hit the future, it's a bad future. You have to be able to see the effects that your actions are having, otherwise they become meaningless. Otherwise unhinged from context.
I want to ask that the world think about this in slightly different terms, in the same way that you just did, about something that matters a bit less, but I think is connected to this, which is, We've made there a kind of a mistake that I see everyone make. Whenever there's a review of this game or whatever, and they're always like, so there's the present, there's the past, there's the good future and the bad future. And if you go on this sign, you go to that one. If you go on that sign, you go to that. It's much simpler to think of it. Like, there's the level and you can go into the past or the future.
Yeah.
I think it's inherently more interesting to I think it's inherently more easy to understand if you frame it like this. There's past, present, and future. You're in the present. You can go to the future. It's horrible because Robotnik's taken over the world.
Yeah.
But if you go into the past where it's all lovely and flowery and naturey, and then you break his machine and you go into the far future, then now it's changed. You were there before. The dark, bad, horrible future. That's not there anymore. You've saved the world. It's beautiful there now. The music is like the heaven version of that music.
It's like brilliant. Utopia, dystopia. Like that. You need that there. Yeah.
It's so good. It's so good. And do you know what it does? It reflects the ideas that they were having at Sega because similar things went on in Knights, didn't they? Depending on how you treated the Knightopians.
Yeah.
You could create different versions of the world that way as well. It's a Sega-y idea.
And the music and the graphics in the background would change.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about that Blood Evolved shite, though. Just kidding. I know Shay loves that game. I'm just messing with him. Sorry, Shay.
I know. Don't worry.
Even though it's my real opinion. So what it essentially boils down to, for me, is this game becomes something of a... I don't even know what to call it, how important this game is to me for this reason. I don't know how to describe it. It is like... a game I point to, and I can honestly say, and I hate saying this because I know how it sounds, I don't mean it quite so definitively as it sounds, but I think there's a degree to which it's kind of like, if you get this, if you understand this game, if you appreciate this game, we're probably going to be able to, like, click in terms of what we like in games, because something I love about in games is superfluous detail. And I don't just mean in terms of in graphics, obviously. But like, as we've mentioned, the whole idea that you can go to the bad future just to check it out,
yeah,
and go, oh shit, like, and get this completely different music and experience, you know. We're not, I mean, that's, to me, that's not even scratching the surface of the pointless stuff you can do in this game, which you should want to do because it's fun. Like, just because something isn't necessary doesn't mean it isn't worth including, you know? In fact, it makes it almost more worth including.
Yeah.
A game like this, I don't know what the development time for this was, but it feels like it was just polished and polished because, while you've got your, if you want to boil it down to essentials, going to the past, destroying the enemy generator, and then finishing the level, there's also a Badnik projection, a Metallics projection hidden. Metal Sonic.
Metallics.
Yeah. Metallics is what he was called in the UK Sonic the Comic, which I believe Dave has some familiarity with.
I've read it before.
Yeah. You're aware of it. So that's what my head goes to, because that's what he was to me. Metal Sonic. There's a projection almost acting like a scarecrow to keep the animals away. now, you can find these and destroy them. There's one in every level, I believe, in every past. But they don't do anything. All it does is make loads of animals appear. And that's got no actual practical effect. You can still get a good future without doing it. But don't you want there to be loads of animals everywhere?
Exactly. You're making the world a better place.
Wouldn't it be nice if there were loads of animals everywhere, right? I mean, there are like areas of the game, areas of levels where you can almost briefly understand why people describe it as, air quotes, ROM hackish, because you've got like rings embedded in walls. You know, there are platforms you just cannot get to. There are platforms where you climb up there and there's just nothing really up there. And I can see why people would dislike that, because they've been conditioned to need everything to have a specific and singular function, right?
Well, this annoys me a bit there. But, well, do you know why the rings are embedded in the walls?
Yes.
Cool. Moving on. No, it's well, for the listener's benefit, it's because basically
Sonic, like, buried them there for the winter, the harsh, harsh winter.
They're burrowing creatures.
Yeah, no, go on, sorry.
There are like four layers to every level. You know, each level calls into memory basically like four layers, and the rings have to stay in the same place on each layer. So if you see a ring hidden in a wall, that's not a mistake.
No.
That's like, oh, which time periods do I need to be in to collect that ring?
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is the thing. Again, for that to matter, you've got to want to collect the rings. And I want to collect the rings.
Yeah.
Like, some people are just going to be like, oh, don't need them. Doesn't matter. If you want to play this game and just get to the end of each level and then go, that sucked, then, you know, be my guest, but you're doing it wrong.
Well, this is, like, Stu, you have previously described classic Sonic games as a sandbox, which I think
the sandbox is accurate. I stand by that.
Yes, that's the perfect definition of them to me. This one is the sandboxiest. If you want to rush from the beginning to the end of the game, you will actually encounter very little resistance. You will get there in like under 2 minutes tops.
Yeah.
Under a minute usually for each level.
I would say only the final two zones start to really put up resistance in terms of traps and enemies and things.
But here's this is the thing about it, right? You can absolutely do that if that's what you want to do. But the thing about Sonic CD that makes it so magical to me is not wanting to do that, is wanting to go back and destroy the Bannock generator.
Yeah.
And one of the criticisms that's often leveled at this game is that, like, there's no room to build speed. There's plenty of room to build speed, because you need the speed to time travel, of course.
Yeah, I mean, what are they? I guess we could point to the shitty Sonic Origins version where you can just drop dash left and right and just warp. Because they ruined it, essentially.
But the thing is for me, those levels are constantly packed with so many ways to build speed.
Yeah, it's plus there are dedicated secret areas that are made for you to get a loop going.
Exactly, exactly. There are literally parts where it's like just a loop with two springs either side so that you just bounce back and you can just take your hand off the controller.
Collision Chaos has that, yeah.
Yeah. Collision Chaos is like Collision Chaos is my favorite Sonic level. Well,
that, Collision
ever.
Chaos is the one that teaches you that, isn't it? It's
yeah.
Like, I mean, Palm Tree Panic is not that hard to get speed up anyway. But then Collision Chaos is the one that teaches you, hey, if you look around, you might find another line. So don't just rely on the first one you find right after getting the signpost, you idiot.
It's Collision Chaos is so it is the ultimate in like that Sonic idea of building speed and using that speed to jump higher and further by using parts of the terrain as ramps. It is the ultimate Sonic level for that. There is so much verticality in that level. And yeah, all over the game, it's just that, the speed and the verticality and the interest in the level design and the fun isn't yeah. in running from left to right. It's no. like what you do is you see the big half pipe and you roll into a ball and you like jump up and down the half pipe. You like swing like a pendulum round this half pipe and you're
maintaining your speed, yeah.
Maintaining your speed and getting that time warp, easy peasy, mate. It's yeah. not about running. It's the more you know about how classic Sonic's physics work, the more fun you will have with Sonic CD. It is the yeah. Sonic fans' Sonic game.
I mean, I'm gonna be reasonable with this because I love this game. You know, I do. I understand this game and what it's going for. I'm not gonna pretend this is the easiest Sonic game to get into, like, because it's clearly not by design. You know, I say get into, but what it's asking of you is a very different mindset to what you get in Sonic 1, 2, 3, and Knuckles. And I get people not clicking with it immediately. I mean, I know for a fact I didn't. I remember going on that Sonic forum and saying, yeah, it's rubbish. It's like, it's stupid. It's just kind of dumb and boring and bland, and being told off. And then later going back to it and being like, oh, I see. Now I get it.
Sorry, everyone. So I don't love Sonic CD. And
well, oh, shut horrible. Up, Dave.
And it, no, I do. Me. I do love Sonic CD, but I can't play Sonic CD. I haven't had the time to spend on it that has allowed me to get to the point that like someone who really knows it and plays it properly is at. So
yeah.
to me, it's kind of frustrating because I do get what it's doing, but only because I've been told.
Yeah.
In terms of actually playing it, I find it a very frustrating experience, but I know that if I was to keep at it, it's kind of the only get good Sonic. And there's a downside to that, because so Sonic 3 and Knuckles, which we've already, you know, rhapsodized about at length, that game rewards basic play, and it super rewards complex play and really thinking about it and exploring. Sonic CD kind of doesn't reward surface play. It's well, frustrating if you don't know what to
in
do.
In a sense, though, it does have the time stones route you can take if you want to get the good ending while
oh,
not
yeah, no, no. If
around.
You just want a good ending, I'm talking about yeah. more in terms of like... So for example, I was having a go on it today to get ready for this and just to remind myself, because the thing is, I've played this and I've finished it, but I probably got the good ending as well back in the PC days, but it was so long ago.
Yeah.
Sonic 3 and Knuckles, for me, moment to moment, is joy. So I play that more. Now, yeah. if Sonic CD, if I'd played yes. that as much, it would also be as enjoyable, it would appear. But it currently isn't. And so what I find, and therefore I'm presumably speaking kind of on behalf of people who don't get it and are like, yeah. well, I don't like this one, is the way the game teaches you to play it and get good at it is by saying no to you a lot in a way that the Mega Drive Sonic games didn't. So, for example, there was a bit that I was playing earlier today. It was the water level. And,
Tidal Tempest.
Yes, thank you. I don't even know which level, like what name's which. And so, water level, I'm in the water, I see a bubble. Every Sonic player knows you go, rip, and you get the bubble and you're fine. You yeah. never know when the next one's going to be, so get it even if you're not drowning. So off I went to get it. something, and I don't know what, because I haven't explored the level enough to learn it, pushed me away from this bubble. A current started up, a fan somewhere must have turned on, and I was pushed away from this bubble, and I'm like, oh, so now I'm like, well, I'll go back and get it, and I couldn't. The game was saying, no, don't, you can't. So I tried going over different ways, and no. So I'm like, okay, do you know what? I'm going to drown. I'll go somewhere else. I found a spring. This spring saved my life. I went up out of the water. I went really high into the air. And here's what I found. So I'm standing on a ledge, and there is a wall in front of me that is taller than I can jump. So really tall wall. But I can tell that I could get on top of that if I could come up with a way. Now, on the other side of this wall to me is the origin point of one of those things that's a dangerous spiky ball on the end of a chain going round in a big circle.
Oh, yeah.
And it can go behind the wall that's in my way. So what the effect that you have is it goes up on the side of the wall I can't reach and down on the side of the wall that I can't reach. Sorry, not a spiky ball. It was a platform.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
yeah, and so I can
jump on this platform. I spent about 5 minutes trying to get good enough at Sonic the Hedgehog to get on this platform because, of course, it's coming down in its arc, in its circle, and as soon as I've jumped on it, it disappears off again behind the wall, and I'm pushed off.
Mm.
So I'm like, okay, whatever, I know what to do. I time it right, I jump up, and from there, I can get on the ledge that's halfway up, from which I can jump to the top of the thing I'm trying to get to, which worked. That happened. Now I've got another tall wall in front of me, but I've already found out that this platform that's going around on the chain has a button on it. It's a pressure button, and when I stand on it, that wall disappears like a Star Trek door, or like a Star Wars door, the fast one in the Death Egg.
Yeah.
Death Star. But I can't, because the platform, it's coming, and I have to jump, and then now it's gone, and now, but then if I jump on the button and the door opens, I jump on, and it closes again, and I went, do you know what? Forget it. The game said no, I'm going. And that is the frustration of not being good enough at Sonic CD. But I know, if I get good enough at Sonic CD, that I can find out what to do there.
So this was essentially a public admission of your own ineptitude.
Yes. Right. And it is harder to get aptitude in this game than it is in, like, Sonic 3 and Knuckles. But I'm guessing that if I get it, it'll feel great.
Well, that's not something I would dispute. It definitely is. It's a game for only the super way past cool people.
But that's the beauty of it, right? People who love the game, it's because you've worked hard on it and been rewarded by being great at this game now.
You put in the... No, I wouldn't even call it work. I mean... Mm-hmm. It's a matter of perseverance, and the thing is, when you're doing it, you get to listen to some amazingly awesome music and look at some amazingly awesome graphics.
One
of
my
favorite. Like work to me.
Sonic CD the album is my Sergeant Pepper or whatever. It's like the childhood album that I can't believe. It's so good. And the fact that all the adults around me aren't into it is ridiculous. And the only difference
between those
classic albums is that proper adults are still not into it. And that's not fair.
Yeah, it's horrifying. You're just like, hey, listen to this. And I'm like, no, thanks. I'd like to listen to Simple Minds, actually. And oh my God.
Can't even get Chris to listen to it.
What? Really? He likes Transformers. That's ridiculous. It's like, Chris, listen to this, and it's like turning his nose up at it, and you're like, Chris, listen to this, and it's like, you got the touch, you got the power, and he's just like, yes, mate.
To be fair, that is a fucking cool song.
Yeah, it is a cool song.
His point is, it's a game soundtrack, and so he should listen to it while playing the game, which, fair enough.
A nonsense.
But the thing is, that You Got the Touch is a much better song than Transformers the Movie is a film. I'd probably rather listen to the album of that.
Yeah, it's true. I made a bad decision in comparing it to that, didn't I? After all the work is done, yeah.
I mean, like, it absolutely... Like I say, it's a Sonic fan's Sonic game, and that's both a blessing and a... You know, that's both a compliment and kind of a criticism, because it's like... Sonic 3 and Knuckles, I don't really have the same qualifiers for. I think it's much, much easier to get into. It's like, what's the premise of Sonic 3 and Knuckles? You stop Robotnik, right. What's the premise of Sonic CD? Well, have you ever seen Back to the Future? And it's, you know, it's just from the word go, it is a more complicated proposition. I totally understand that. It's just that what you have here is you have a genuinely unique take on the same basic mechanics
that
is often dismissed for not being identical.
Yeah.
Where my frustration lies, because what Dave has said I find entirely reasonable.
Yes, absolutely.
What I don't like, and this is not a thing exclusive to Sonic CD, is the I don't get this.
Yep, therefore
it's the game's fault.
Yeah,
not like there's nothing wrong with not getting something, but I don't get this. I've got to come up with a reason that makes it not my problem.
Yeah,
and you see this a lot with many, many games. Like, I don't like this. And that's okay, but I don't like this, and I'm a genius and the arbiter of all taste and distinction, so I now need to think of a reason why I can slag it off to everyone else. And that's what happens with this game a lot, with this whole ROM hacky criticism, which the instant anyone says it, I just mute or block them.
And the reason
because
why
you know
so...
you're never going to have a decent conversation with someone who says that.
I think the reason why it's so frustrating is because, like, haven't we all done it at some point?
And of course. I used to ourselves do it constantly.
And we recognise what a stupid thing that was to do.
The thing is that there is a lot of the time...
I probably still do it.
There's a lot of the time that I recognise why you would get petulant about a game, right? Because there's a lot of games that are very, very popular that I just don't see the appeal of at all. And it's like, okay, I can say, huh, it's not really for me, but that doesn't really reflect kind of the alienation that you feel. Everybody's in going, oh man, look at this amazing thing. And I'm sitting there on the sidelines, like, looking at what I think looks a bit shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't really get it. I don't see it. That's frustrating. That's alien.
Yes, I hate that, yeah.
And what I sometimes do is I sometimes get a bit petulant. I sometimes get a little bit like, okay, it's not just that this is bad, it's that you guys are idiots for liking it.
Yeah.
And as I'm like trying to wind them up because I don't like it. And I do that.
Yeah.
And I do that because I'm fallible and I'm human and sometimes it's a bit funny.
Yeah, it's funny sometimes.
And
yeah.
I reckon that a lot of us do it, you know?
I mean, I would be lying if I said I didn't like winding people up.
Yeah, like, but the thing is that when the shoe's on the other foot and it happens to me, it's unacceptable.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you on that. I find that there are many things in life that I think I should have free reign to do. But when those same things are done to me, I dislike it. In fact, let me put this more simply. I want to do unto others, but not have them do unto me, unto myself, the things that I do unto others.
Well,
that's unreasonable.
I want to be able to sow. I never, ever want to reap.
I hate reaping. I'm just going to hold my hands up and say it. I love sowing. I think it's great. I'm happy as Larry when I'm sewing.
I like
it. But when it comes to reaping, no thank you.
There are experiences where I didn't want to do them and I was like, no, and was getting petulant about it. Not necessarily games, but games, books, whatever. Mm. No, TV series, no.
Sure.
And then just someone who isn't an idiot says it's good. Do you know what I mean? Because for every game that's good, there's loads of idiots on the internet saying it's good. So you can pick and choose. If you're in a grumpy mood about something, you can pick them and go like, oh, well, these people are stupid and they say it's good. So, but when someone has just talked me into it, like, oh, all right, fine, I flipping will watch Squid Game then, or something like that. And it's like, oh, now I've had joy. The times when you actually do put the effort in and do the thing that you were grumpy
there
about.
Is also the hype, what they call the hyperversion, isn't there? Where everyone's like, oh my God, this game's actually amazing. And you're like, shut up, I don't care. There are too many good things.
Yeah, therefore, no.
That's how I got with like Breaking Bad. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, that's the best television program I've ever seen. Okay.
Oh, I know. I'm on that right now with Good Omens. I can't watch Good Omens because of how annoyingly into Good Omens people are.
And it's so frustrating, isn't it?
It's
when
so annoying.
People are enjoying themselves, and you're like, oh, come on. I'm not familiar with the thing that you like. I feel frozen out. Therefore, it's
no
bad and you're wrong
I get
and stupid.
In... Yeah, oh, you like David Tennant. No, I like David Tennant. What am I on about?
Yeah.
So,
I think this has turned
so
into
easy.
An interesting psychological deconstruction.
But
it's
so
like
easy
to
fall into that. And when you push through it and you do the thing that they're saying, and there's such depth there, it is very clear to me that Sonic CD is one of those. Now, the problem is, and this is a problem, I don't think I'm good enough to get there. I just don't. Because it's been decades.
Mm.
And I can't do it. I can't, because I can't learn a layout, and you have to in Sonic CD. You have to know.
No, you don't. Honestly, I don't think you do. I really don't think that you do. I challenge that. I dispute that. I mean, I get where you're coming from. The only thing you need to know at all is where the thing is, the generator is, but you don't. You can just find that. Like, you know, just go and look for it.
Yeah.
What you need to find is a line that lets you go back in time, and there are plenty of those in every level. You just got to find them.
And
you know?
I am still at the point where that's what I mean. I can't go through time.
Well, I
just
think
can't.
You're
do
going
it.
Through time right now, Dave.
I like that what you're saying about, like, you know, hyperversion and all that. Like, I find that very, like, I just want to, like, touch on that. I think it is very human to feel alienated, because the root of the problem in a lot of these cases is that you want to like the thing, you want to, like, be involved with this, but also for me it's like, kind of, there's so often I'm just a misery guts, but also I know I know that I have undiagnosed brain worms that honestly makes getting into new things, like,
well, it's a pain in the ass, isn't it, getting into new things, right? Who wants to do that?
Like, some days, it takes genuine emotional energy. Some days I would literally rather sit and stare at a wall than do a new thing. That's why, kind of, like, I have a wheelhouse that I stick very rigidly to. I would like to expand my horizons a bit, but, you know, it's genuinely difficult, and I do think I have, like, some kind of brain worm that needs looked into.
I feel that way very strongly because, like, I want to stay on top of gaming as a thing, and... Like, for example, I bought Final Fantasy 16 a few weeks ago, because I genuinely think I thought it looked great. I'd heard great things about the combat, and I really thought it looked like a fun game. I have not even gone into the first cave in that game, and there's a cave on the first screen. And, like, I have not just had the gumption to just go upstairs, sit down, pick the controller up, and play the goddamn game for any amount of time, because every time I do, I just kind of think to myself... Oh, Jesus, I'm just going to play something I've already played.
Well, for me, it's that I already played Final Fantasy XIV, and, like, a lot of my friends did and still do absolutely adore it. They are never done singing its praises. And I played it, and when I say I played it, I mean I played it for 70 hours, at least. I played a good chunk of that game, and I couldn't get into it for whatever reason. And what it means is that when, like, everyone's, like, singing the praises of all these new Final Fantasy 14 stuff, is I'm sitting there like, what do I do? I you feel alienated. You feel like you're on the outside of this.
It's interesting,
thing.
Isn't
you
it?
You feel like you're watching your friends have fun from the other end of the park fence.
I like that because I like Destiny 2, and I guarantee that every Destiny 2 trailer that drops, there's like a million people looking at that going, what the hell is going on?
But the thing, like, Final Fantasy 16 was made by, like, a lot of the same staff.
And, to Devil May Cry 5, right?
To Devil May Cry 5, which I loved, but also to Final Fantasy 14. Yeah. And I'm kind of sat there like, okay, do I want to put myself through this out of... Like, I am kind of curious, kind of interested. They said it was like Game of Thrones, which killed a lot of my interest. But do I want to put myself through this and then find out that I hate it? And then have to come back and watch everybody raving about this game that they love, and I'm just like, I don't like this. You know, that's exhausting. I don't like that. So to the Sonic CD people, to the Sonic CD haters...
go to hell.
This is
swivel.
This is my olive branch. You know...
this is my olive branch. You can't see it, but it's my arm, and I'm doing a gesture with my finger.
What I would like to say is you're all definitely really stupid, and I hate you.
No,
it's, you know, I get it. I totally get it. You know, I've been in that situation myself. It's just, I don't like what Dave's saying is that, like, like that makes sense to me. He's given it a go and he's like, I'm just not getting it. I just
he's given the old college try. Yeah.
And I'm not gonna stop. I'm never in my life gonna stop playing this game. Like it's Sonic CD. I'll get it one day.
You haven't fed me any lines about this, you know? You haven't fed me any stuff that is just provably, demonstrably untrue.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what frustrated me about the conversation around this game.
Yes. And to this day, unfortunately.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because I'm hoping that there are people who have not yet had the trustworthy non-idiot people say, no, you really should give this one a go. It will bring joy if you get deep enough into it. And, like, yeah. I think that you two are that voice. Because, like, they know you're right about Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
I mean, I had a friend who didn't like Sonic CD.
I had a friend.
No, I still have them as a friend. I mean, my friend didn't like the game. And I was over at their house. They were doing whatever. And I was playing on their Xbox. I was playing Sonic CD. And sort of by seeing me playing it, they now like it. Because they're like, oh, that's what you do. I mean, with Sonic CD, I mean, we've talked a lot about its sort of its reception, which I think is important, but it's not the game, so to speak. We've talked about how you play the game, and rather than go forensically into detail on, like, every single stage, which is not... We're not going to do it. I mean, we could do, but, like, I don't want to. I think we should talk about some of the details in the stages, like some of the smaller details that stand out, or things that we just like about the game. I think that would be a fun thing to do.
I just want to talk about a few of, like, my favorite little flourishes. Number one, just look at the backgrounds.
Yes.
Anywhere. Mm, yeah. There is a special stage where you are running around and Jupiter is rising out of the clouds. There is one where there is an entire enormous, lovely, luscious, like, Acropolis with, like, a big, like, clock on it and, like, waterfalls.
Oh, the clock! We found this out in our Sonic the Comic the Podcast Patreon streams. Yeah, that this random background on one special stage has a multi-tiered island with, like, waterfalls, like a wedding cake island with waterfalls.
It's gorgeous.
An ancient city with a giant clock as its centerpiece, because this is the world where time something something something. Brilliant.
It's so good. There's, like, little bits, like there's an angel that is hidden away very well hidden.
Yeah, and that's in Quartz. I want to say it might be Wacky Workbench, actually.
Is it's Wacky Quartz? Workbench.
It's Wacky Workbench, yeah.
And it just...
Isn't, like, it so great there's a level called Wacky Workbench? That sounds like a piece of educational software, doesn't it?
But, like...
Darling Kindersley's Wacky Workbench!
There's,
learning can be fun! No, it can't. Stop lying.
That's
sorry,
it.
Go on.
There's a bit where you're in the background and you're whizzing around these loops and then you crash out through a wall and, like, there's a Sonic silhouette, like, in the old, like, Wile E. Coyote cartoons.
Oh, yeah!
That's great.
But my favourite detail, my favourite little detail is, like, all of the bad future music are bops. They are so menacing. Yeah. Like, there's, like... Yeah. The Palm Tree Panic, the first one, is just remixed screams, and that sounds edgy, but the energy of it really sells it, because this is like this is now a machine world, you know, all the animals been turned into machines.
Yeah,
it's really cool. But my favorite little detail is in the final level, Metallic Madness, I believe.
Yes,
where just there is a callback to the Japanese main theme of the game is called "You Can Do Anything." It's like, and it ends with "If you try, you can do anything."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's just this little refrain kind of murmured in the background of Metallic Madness, Bad Future, that goes, "You can't do anything, so don't even try." And it's like, I
awesome.
Love that so much.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's so cool.
I'm personally, like, when it comes to, like, bits and moments in this game, I think some slightly bigger stuff that we should talk about is this was the first appearance of Amy Rose, right?
Yes.
Or at least in a game.
Yeah. No, it is. Oh,
she turns up in
Rose the Rascal,
she turns up at the beginning of Collision Chaos, hearts fly out of her head and she follows Sonic around. She's not exactly the most developed character at this point, or now. And then Metal Sonic smashes through a set of unbreakable spikes, grabs her, she screams, and then he flies off. There's your motivation. You know, I also want to briefly talk about the boss battles in this game, because they are very different to what you'd sort of come to expect from the series. But that's kind of because at this point, it hadn't really been kind of codified what this series was, had it?
Yeah.
Really. It's only because Sonic 2 was essentially Sonic 1 again, and sorry, don't argue it was, that it became that's what Sonic is. But Sonic CD's bosses are, in some instances, just seem like a joke. And I don't mean, like, the bad kind of joke. I mean the genuinely funny kind of joke. Like, the first one that you fight is Robotnik in this sort of tall, slightly imposing-looking machine with two bumpers on the front and spikes for feet. And if you have any ability whatsoever, you're going to be invincible by the time you get there. So Robotnik drops in, gets absolutely pasted immediately, and then panics and flies off. And I genuinely believe that's an on-purpose joke. Like, he comes down in this quite big, scary-ish looking machine, and you just can't be hurt by it. I love that.
I'm glad you can't. I had a bit of trouble with it.
Honestly.
I have no ability. But, no, what I do really like about that is that the bumpers stop you from hitting it, and then you're like, oh, what do I do? But when you do hit it, you destroy his bumper, and then there's nothing he can do anymore. You could just, you've destroyed one bumper, now you get the other one, now you hit him on the head and he's dead. That's it. Because they're not hit the guy eight times.
Yes.
They're figure out the way to hit the guy once. That's
they're a little more, I wouldn't say cerebral, that's the wrong term, but there's a bit more to them.
Yeah.
Like, the second one is a precursor to Sonic Spinball. Like, it's an actual pinball thing where you have to climb up the table. And it's either the easiest thing ever, or it's an unbelievably frustrating.
If you could have only seen how long I spent just trying to get on that.
I mean, I've played this game 100 times, and I've had sessions on that boss that have taken me minutes and minutes and minutes.
Okay.
Because sometimes it just doesn't work where you want it to.
Yeah.
But then my favorite boss, and I'm not going to talk about all of them, but my favorite boss in this game is one where you're running on a conveyor belt.
Yes.
And the friction you're creating by spinning this conveyor belt is destroying, by overheating and melting, this cage thing that Robotnik is standing in.
And as it melts and gets hotter,
he starts doing a little, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, little dance. And it's like so funny and it's so memorable. And I just love it. I really do. I guess one of the few criticisms I can give is that the final boss in this game is just kind of not really that imposing at all.
No, the final boss is rubbish.
It's like, whatever, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's just meant to kind of be a breezy thing, because that's not the challenge.
Well, the kind of the big climax set piece of the entire game, although I do want to say, just as a point of interest, the Japanese version of the boss theme has some really weird mixes in there. It's got like a song by a funk band named Xavier, featuring Bootsy Collins, Work That Sucker to Death.
Mm.
It like heavily samples that. I believe it samples
work
a bit
that
of Bob Marley.
To death. Come on now, work that sucker to death.
Genuinely a jam. But
the Muppet Gonzo starts talking in the background, but nobody can hear what he says.
But the main set piece, the main attraction
and
of this
Tiny
game,
Tim, who did not die. I can't do Gonzo's voice.
Was bold, brainy, and cold-hearted.
And Tiny Tim, who did die.
Okay, Dave, that was remarkable. That was an incredible impression.
It was good.
But of what? Gonzo? Or the voice in the background of Sonic CD? They're the same.
Yeah, that was the point you were making.
Yeah. Mm.
But, of course, the main attraction is the race against Metalix, or Metal Sonic, if you're nasty. But, yeah, like it's just a race. But a special race.
Well, there's a reason. There's a reason it's kind of become iconic.
This is the thing, right? It's what I keep saying. This is the thing. Sorry. You are being chased by Robotnik. 5 hours sleep and like a bottle of Iron Brew. I'm fine. You're being chased by Robotnik with a big laser. You hit that laser, you die. You have to keep up with Metal Sonic, because if he reaches the finish line first, a door comes down and you can't finish and you'll get zapped by Robotnik.
Mm.
But the thing about this race that is just...
You're about to say this thing that I've currently died for about the 70th time while talking to you is going to be... Are you going to say it's really easy?
No. It's actually...
It's not easy at all.
It's not easy at all.
Hooray, because good.
You have to know kind of like how to use Sonic's physics to their fullest. It's genuinely very close a lot of the time. But it is the only bloody time in the entire series that a Metal Sonic is actually a Metal Sonic. It's actually behaving like a doppelganger of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All the rest of the time is just fighting him in like in a one-on-one arena, or transforming into an enormous dragon, or shooting lasers at him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so bizarre to me that the impetus behind the character of Metal Sonic was just discarded after one go.
Somebody forgot Sonic 2 on Master System's Silver Sonic. Whoops, another clanger from the Shaymeister.
isn't that the one that has the little hook claw?
Yeah?
Yeah, he just comes out and he swings a hook claw at you.
Yeah, but he still turns into a ball and does Sonic stuff.
And so does Silver Sonic. You know what I mean?
I've got COVID, forgive me.
I'm Scottish, forgive me. But I don't know. It's something that I feel is tragically underutilized, is the idea that Metal Sonic would behave like some kind of like Metal Sonic.
Mm. I agree. I mean, this is the peak Metal Sonic design, in my humble opinion.
Yes.
And
the fact that he is kind of a Sonic that kind of cheats, like he turns electric and he'll fly through spikes that you can't go through.
Yeah.
It makes it feel like a rival.
Yeah.
You know? It gives Sonic a rival. Doesn't he also do the finger thing when you...
He does! Meet him? It's so cool!
Yeah. Like, he does the kind of Sonic wink thing. Sonic's like, hey, that's my thing! That's my thing that I do! I feel like I'm gonna explode here!
Why was he Homsar there for a minute?
I don't know why it was Homsar. So, Sonic CD the race scene is famously kind of iconic. There's a reason it turns up in lots of fan art. There's a reason it gets homaged so heavily, you know. The music, for one thing, is probably my favourite track in the game, you know, the Bad Future Stardust Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reasonably sure that plays regardless of which future you've actually achieved. I could be wrong. Like, that's the race music. I might be wrong about that.
Yeah, but I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. And the version of Sonic Generations is even more awesome.
I love that little thing it does in the cutscene where it just, like, drops the bass out just in while he goes over there and then it goes back. That was a really good little remix, that.
Yeah. Now, one thing I want to talk about, because I'm coming towards the end of this, I think, and people are going to be complaining about that, because there's a lot to talk about this game, but we're not here to forensically examine it, okay? This game... Now, I've been thinking about this, because there's no way that this could possibly be true, but this is one of the earliest games I can think of that has unlockables that saved the cartridge.
Oh, yeah.
Because this game has a time attack mode, which is very full-featured compared to anything that came before. You can choose any level. Every time you get is saved. And there's also an overall time. They all add up to that overall time, every act. Now,
can I just ask, is this the game that the phrase time attack comes from? It's certainly,
I believe
I've
it probably
it.
Is, but I don't know that for a fact, so I'm not going to pretend that I know that for a fact.
It was when I first heard it, but that doesn't mean anything.
Like, the same way that I feel there must be other games that have unlockables, but this is the first one I can think of. So if there are others, please tell me, because I genuinely want to know, okay? Yeah. I'm sure there are, and they're just escaping me at the moment. But what I mean specifically is unlockables that save the cartridge, not stuff like the second quest in Mario Brothers. That doesn't count, okay? Anyway, in fact, I think that maybe Mario World predated this, but whatever, doesn't matter. The point is, You play these levels in time attack mode where the aim has changed. The aim is now to get from, you know, left to right, left to right as fast as possible. Totally changes the way that you look at the levels, you know? But you can always play them over and over again to shave down your time, shave down your overall time. And as your overall time shrinks, as it reaches certain thresholds, you unlock things in the main menu. You unlock something called the DA Garden. You unlock, like, a music player. And some other stuff, I forget what it is. But it's just a very cool piece of added value, you know, not because I think this probably would have heavily popularized speedrunning, right? I mean, the shaving your time off, seeing just how many fractions of a second you can completely get a level quicker, that's a very compelling thing, especially when it's tied to unlocking content.
I think it must have played a part in the origins of speedrunning. It just must have. I can't remember any other game that gave you this option to do, like, get better at it faster.
Because Sonic 1 and Sonic 2 also measure your time, obviously.
Well, yeah, but so the incentive is there.
They don't save them.
No, and give you stuff.
And there's no dedicated mode for it with leaderboards. And not only does this do it, but I believe it also measures in fractions of a second as well.
Yeah.
Which the other games don't. So it's very precise. And it's just another bit of value layered onto the top of this very expansive, very, very good video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else I can really say about it right now. It's just well up there with my favourite Sonic games, well up there with one of the most misunderstood Sonic games. And I think we've done a pretty good job making a case for each side of that.
And
you know?
Just in case anyone doesn't know, I just want to make it clear, just in case you don't, in case there's anyone who listens to Retronauts who isn't old for some reason, the point of all of this was because it was amazing to be able to have a game on CD then. Like, that was the latest exciting thing, and CDs themselves were still thought of as colossal storage for games. Just ridiculous. Like, if something was on CD, you imagined it would be endless and just fractally whirling lands of gaming. And that very quickly, you know, within a few months, it was very clear that wasn't actually necessarily true. But, like, that was, you know, so you can have a real audio soundtrack on there. Yeah. That was amazing. It wasn't just, when we say it's good, it wasn't just because it was a particularly good example of a game soundtrack. Like, it was also a very early example, for me, the first one I ever encountered, of a CD audio, non-chip music, game soundtrack. It was amazing, Sonic.
I think my favourite gaming aesthetic, which the Mega CD reps quite hard, obviously, is the 2D sprite-based platformer or other genre with CD music.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just something compelling as hell about that. I mean, Shay, you're a fan of... the Saturn continues that to a heavy extent, you know.
Yeah.
Shay, you're a fan of Saturn Sonic 3D, I want to say?
Yeah, yes, I am. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and that's a 2D game, despite the name, sorry, fans, that has a super Richard Jacques soundtrack again. Now, I'm flagging quite heavily, so I'm going to end this podcast, like, reasonably abruptly. But I think this has been a good case for the defense and also for the, like, you know, relatively measured offense against Sonic CD. So what I'm going to ask now is, if anyone wants to continue to hear your well-thought-out opinions, Dave Bollman, where on earth can the people do so?
You can do that every 2 weeks. There's and it's long as well. We're talking like 2 hours of content every 2 weeks. Sonic the Comic, the podcast, which you can find on the web at stctp.zone or just by looking for it in podcast places. And it's me and my friend Chris McFeely from Transformers the Basics going over Sonic the Comic, the British Sonic comics that came out concurrent with the games in the early 90s. And didn't decide to just randomly change everything and set Sonic in a version of Freedom Fighters fighting on Endor.
Freedom Shiters.
With Princess Leia there. And in fact, it is literally just the latest Star Wars film, but on cartoon form. No,
you know
it was
how come you're
actually
thinking
about
of like,
Sonic.
You know how come you're thinking of like a Sonic comic and you're going, ew. It's not that one. It's the other one. It's a good one.
It's a Sonic comic where you think of it and you go, ooh.
Exactly. It's the Sonic comic where they do the Death Egg story properly.
Dave, do you know what blew my mind recently related to STC?
Was that?
When I found out that Nigel Kitching did script and art for the Red Dwarfs magazine.
Yeah.
And they're really good.
And
Dobbin as well, I believe, turned up.
And therefore...
And Carl Flint.
Quite interesting, therefore, that one of the key stories in SDC is called Back to Reality, a name he got from Red Dwarf.
Huh, that is interesting. And that's the only interesting thing about Red Dwarf.
And we cover all of this stuff... And Red Dwarf, and just stuff that was going on at the time in the world surrounding the comics, so that you've got the proper context, because that is what you will not get by talking to flipping fanboys on the internet of anything. You won't have the proper context, and we are determined for you to have it, because it was so joyous. So that is what we give you on Sonic the Comic, the podcast, every 2 weeks. Go and listen to that. Enjoy.
Yes. Now more zingy.
Also, I'm Demon Tomato Dave on various things like YouTube and the social medias and that.
And Shuggles, where can we find you on the internet?
Hello, you can find me on YouTube and Blue Sky and Tumblr, basically anywhere. I will be at Shuggles _. If that doesn't return a scribbled little grimacing face, then just try regular Shuggles without the _. But that's Shuggles. I do overlong game talky videos, including a project that may actually be out by the time this goes live. I finished the audio for it.
Yes, hooray! Very exciting. I know how long and hard you work on these. So,
And it's going to be on Pokemon Brilliant Diamond. If that sounds like something that interests you, brilliant. Maybe stick around for that. If not, I've got some stuff on... Crash Bandicoot, which I'm very happy with.
That's my favourite one.
Keru no Tami ni Kani Wanaru, or The Frog for Whom the Bell Tolls, which I was quite happy with. And, of course, the seminal classic, seminal being the operative word there, Mysterious Girlfriend X.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, they're good videos, and I really love that Crash one in particular. I think that's one of the best Crash videos I've ever seen, going level by level, and just like, it's almost like audio commentary, except good, instead of like normal audio commentary, which is people going like, oh, I don't really remember doing this. Anyway, yes, hi, I'm Stuart Jip. You can find me at Stupacabra on Twitter and Blue Sky, or it might just be Stuart Jip on Blue Sky, I forget. Blue Sky is still new. I don't know if Twitter will still be around by the time this goes out, or X, as it's called at the moment. Moving on. Retronauts, if you enjoy Retronauts, thank you, and you'd like to support Retronauts, thank you, on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/retronauts, where for a mere $5 a month, which is shit all, you will gain access to 2 extra monthly episodes, as well as early access to every episode, so that you'll be the coolest kid on the playground, and everyone else will be like, oh man, did you hear that Out of This World episode of Retronauts? And you'll be like, yeah, I heard that a week ago, you sad dicks. But you also get Diamond Fight's Incredible This Week in Retro Columns, and you get access to the Discord, so you can tell me, Stu, you're not very good at promoting these things, are you? You keep calling people sad dicks, and they don't like that. You shouldn't do that, Stu, and I'll have to concede that you're correct and I'm doing a horrible job. You can also tell me that I'm very bad at ending podcasts, which I am, because this is the end of the podcast. I'm ending it now. Thank you very much for listening, and until next time, I shall see you in the future.
What? Teleportation, yeah!
Isn't it appropriate that, like, the ending for the Sonic CD episode is very abrupt and anticlimactic? I, like, I just want to pick up on something that Dave said there, where he had like the little younger friends. Because I remember that like we were in doing some English work while I was in like fifth year, and there was these little third years who had that room as their common room, and we were kind of invading. And like while we were doing our work around all like the cool kids and the lassie that I fancied and everything, they were sitting there playing Yu-Gi-Oh! And I had to sit there and just very like there was one point where I was basically like, I don't know why I remember this so vividly, but it was basically like while nobody was paying attention, I just quickly went over to the kid that was losing and was like, Gemini summon Ancient Gear Knight. And he's like, what? And he's like, you can Gemini summon him. If you summon him again, he gets an extra effect. It's like, what? And then I just like, just, you know, like tap my nose and walked away. Anyway, the teacher thought I was taking the piss out of them and I got called up for bullying them.
Oh, what?
And
oh,
I was giving him advice. I was telling him how to become a master of children's card games.
Do you know what that is exactly like, Shay? This, you don't have to put this in. This is nothing to do with this podcast. But it's exactly like the time when we were in assembly in primary school and the headmaster or whoever was doing the assembly played the classical piece, The Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. And it was, who knows what this is called? Come up and tell me for a prize. And I leant over to my sort of hard friend and went, it's The Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. Go on, go and say. And he went up and everyone thought I was taking the piss out of him. Everyone thought that I was doing a joke because I was going to make the hard kid say Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy in front of the school. But it was. That was what it was. And he was right. And he got it right. I don't know why I didn't go up. I was being nice.
I mean, anyway. you got, next time you were getting beaten up in the lunch yard, like, you know, that kid's going to come and defend you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, they'll walk up and they'll go, no, stop. This guy's okay.
Yeah. Well, he was a good mate anyway. But
Once it reminds me of the time that I whispered something very quietly to a friend after an assembly was finished and we were clearing away and I got shouted at and got, like, detention.
Yeah.
And I just... They said, you got this attention. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? The assembly's finished and I was putting chairs away. Why? What are you talking about? And he's like, you got detention on Monday. And I'm just like, I'm not going to that. He's like, you better go to that. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to that. He's like, see you Monday. And I'm like, you won't see me because I'm not going to that. And then I didn't go to that and never heard anything about it again. All detention is fake. Getting in trouble is a fake idea. Kids, if you're listening to this, there are no consequences for any of your actions. Do whatever you want. Kill, maim, steal. Do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. There are no consequences. Everything's fake.
I was about to chime in and say there is no permanent record.
Download ROMs and keep them for way longer than 24 hours. It doesn't matter
anymore.
Until
you said kill, maim, steal, at which point, I don't know, I feel like we shouldn't encourage that.
Maybe don't kill.
Don't kill. Don't maim, even.
I wouldn't steal either.
Maim really responsibly.
Steal, that is a very much case-by-case basis, I think. But don't kill.
Say you're in a supermarket. Maim. You're hungry. You haven't got any money. All you do and you just don't want to spend it. You see something you want, just take it.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? Nothing. Nobody cares. Anyway, moving on. I'm so unwell.
We should be impaired every time.
Sorry. We should be jailed.
And then we can meet our hero, Yuji Naka.
Hooray!
Who didn't work in this game?
Hey, whoever's editing this, I am so sorry.